And welcome back. The situation in Nigeria is one that was probably given limited attention by most Americans until last April, when more than 200 Nigerian schoolgirls were kidnapped by Boko Haram, an insurgent group intent on establishing a separate Islamic state in Nigeria. The girls remain missing, but the incident put a spotlight on Nigeria, what's going on, why, and why it's important to us 6,000 miles away. Joining me in studio is Benjamin Ola Akande, Dean and Professor of Economics at Webster University's Business School. He is from Nigeria and joins me in studio. He and his wife Yemi, who, by the way, has just taken over as Executive Director of Focus St. Louis, were in Nigeria just a couple of months ago. Benjamin, Professor, so nice to have you with
us. It's good to be here. Just a correction. Actually, my wife is Bola. My sister is Yemi.
I beg your pardon. Bad information. I'm glad you're
here. I just want to make sure, because I know they're listening, so they'll be all, everything's all good now.
Okay, well, we'll wish Yemi good luck on her new job.
Absolutely.
She replaces a friend of ours, Chris Chadwick. So
yes.
She is with a good organization.
I think Yemi is very excited about the opportunity and looking forward to building on the remarkable accomplishments of Chris Chadwick.
Yeah. Well, let's talk a little bit about what's going on in your home country. You're aware that it was announced today that a little more than 60 schoolgirls recently abducted, not part of this original group, apparently have escaped from their captors. What do you know about that?
You know, it's an interesting development because obviously these girls were abducted just a few days ago, 63 of them, and they were taken to some hideout in the state of Bauchi in Maiduguri. And so the Boko Haram terrorists decided to go and invade a military outpost. And so they all left and left the girls behind, left 63 girls behind. So you can just imagine what happened in that situation. The girls look around. There's nobody there. They're all alone. And they make a very quick decision to run for their lives. And so out of 63, 60 decided to run for their lives, and they got away. In the meantime, over 50 of those terrorists that invaded this military outpost were killed. And so these girls were able to escape. And again, it was a situation based on chance. It wasn't any governmental effort to rescue them. And that explains the impasse that we face right now in Nigeria, that the government of the day, the military, have been unable to stop abduction of girls or people being killed by this terrorist group. And that kind of impasse, it's very worrisome indeed.
But is that something that the government should be expected to be able to do? I mean, we're talking about a part of the world where it is easy to hide and make yourself very, very scarce.
Well, I think so, because when you look at the Nigerian terrain, who else or who better would not be able to know the terrain than the people that live there? You know, Nigeria is not a big country. We're talking probably the size of New Mexico and maybe half of Texas. And, you know, you got 170 million people in there. And most of the Boko Haram folks are in the forest, sort of hiding out in the forest. So they're by themselves and with animals in the forest. And so they're all sort of kind of isolated within a defined area of about three states within the country. And when we talk about where they are in Nigeria, we're talking mainly, Borno, Yobe, and Adamawa states, which are very small states. And the fact that the government of the day has really done nothing to try to curtail the growth and the menace of this terrorist organization, I think is what has been worrying a lot of people. And almost 3 months after the abduction of these girls, we have not heard from the girls. We have not heard anything at all from the government. That in itself is also very worrisome as well.
It would also suggest that the Boko Haram has a lot of support on the ground. I mean, there are 170 million people there, and nobody is saying, well, they were here yesterday or they're over there or whatever.
Well, there is support. I think the support is probably not as significant as what we think. I think the support that they have found has come through fear. They have instilled fear into the hearts and minds of many of the locale folks. And from that perspective, they are scared to talk. And what is interesting about Boko Haram is that they're not killing other people. They're killing their own people. They're killing fellow Muslims. They're killing Christians. They're sort of indiscriminate killers. And that in itself is very confusing. Now, they tell us that the main reason for their existence is that they believe that Western education is a sin, and that they want to implement Sharia law. They want to create alternative schools. They talk a lot about corruption of the government. They speak about their disdain for Western education. And as a result of that, they want to send a message. And so they have systematically killed, at the final count that I've received so far, is over 20,000 people in the period of time that they've been in existence.
I want to talk more about the organization, but just to focus for one more minute or two on the schoolgirls. The United States was, I thought, going to be actively involved in helping try to find these youngsters. What is our role over there?
Well, I think what the U.S. did was they sent military advisors, FBI, Secret Service, you know, to go into Nigeria and just try to understand the situation, to try to recognize where what parameters the terrorists were operating, try to understand how they were operating, and then to try to do some surveillance, to understand where they are. Because by mapping out the surveillance, something that the United States had not done before, it gave them an opportunity then to then begin to think about how they're going to react to this. And so what we've seen over the last month or so is sort of preliminary but very vital military intelligence that's taken place, and they're still on the ground working out of Abuja, the capital of Nigeria, and I would even believe working in the north. One of the interesting articles I read the other day was in New York Times, and they were quoting one of the military intelligence folks that were on the ground. And this young man spoke fluent Hausa, and Hausa is one of the key is the main language in the north. And here you had an American, a young American kid that was speaking the local vernacular like as if it was his. That's the kind of intelligence that you have on the ground, and that kind of understanding, I think, is going to enable them to better be able to react and to respond to this terrorist organization.
One of the things that has struck me about this story is the fact that it was so prominent during the first days, and now it's simply left the papers altogether until these other girls, unrelated to the first abduction, showed up over the weekend. People pretty much in this country pretty much seem to have forgotten.
Yeah, you know, it's sad. It's off the front page of the media, the newspapers, but the reality is that it is still in the hearts and minds and a reality for a lot of Nigerians. And a lot of parents, you know, as a Nigerian citizen, I was born in Nigeria, raised there, and came to the United States about 35 years ago. And I have to tell you, I have three daughters, and I was home just about 3 months ago. This is a reality for so many Nigerians to the impact that 10 million girls are not going to school right now. 10 million. They're staying at home. The entire northern part of Nigeria has become sort of a ghost town. You send your kids to school, you have to deal with the possibility that they'll be abducted. And so their education has been almost permanently interrupted. And so that impact is very pervasive.
That's what Boko Haram wants. It wants to disrupt the education. Isn't that what, in fact, the name of this organization
That's
means?
That's right. You know, to Western education is a sin, and let's disrupt education. But, you know, the reality is, why try to make a stand individually against Boko Haram? And so parents are telling their kids, stay home, we'll get you all, we'll find tutors, we'll find neighborhood other alternatives to try to provide education, but you're not going to school. Mm-hmm. Because every time people go to school, they either get killed or they get abducted. And I think that has instilled a degree of fear that I think is pretty significant.
And that means that this organization is winning.
Yes. Yes. So far, they are winning. It is sad to say that, but clearly they are.
We have also been reading most recently about contacts being made between this organization, and you're pronouncing it differently than I am. Was it Boko Haram? Is that the way we're pronouncing
it?
Yeah,
yes.
That it and its leadership has been in contact with elements from Al-Qaeda and also from Shabat in Somalia.
In Somalia.
This is very disturbing because these organizations are real bad actors.
Yeah, they're very bad actors. And what you've got is you've got a derivative of those two organizations in Boko Haram. And what we're also hearing is that was they're tracing funding sources to Saudi Arabia, Al-Qaeda, radical organizations in the United Kingdom, and that they're using kidnapping as a revenue making source to fund their activities. This is a terrorist group that is very sophisticated. They're very bold. They're using all the Western technology that they can find, even though they don't like Western education. Mm-hmm. They've been used to use iPhones and captured videos to send messages. And I think that my long-term prognosis for this is this. They're a nuisance. They're an obstruction. It's not going to last. I think as soon as the Nigerian government, working in concert with the French and the United States, are able to organize themselves, they're going to put an end to this nonsense. But I think it's just going to take some time. And I hope that in the process of trying to put an end to this nonsense, that we don't lose the girls and that remains a viable focus.
Isn't it widely suspected that by now the girls have been dispersed and forced to marry? I mean, God sent God knows where to be with other families and husbands.
Well, you know, I think that that's a real possibility. But at the same time, we also have to think about the fact of movement. The entire region for which these terrorists are operating has basically been circled, and also including working with some of the neighbors in Chad Republic, Niger Republic, Mali. And so for them to move them, even if it's small groups, will be very, very visible. And you've got drones flying. You've got all kinds of intelligence going on. And I think that the general perspective of those who know is that they're being kept in one or two different places and sort of waiting it out, and that there's conversation with the government on ways in which they might be able to negotiate a release. And so that's what's going on right now.
I want to talk a little bit more about what is at stake in Nigeria for us here in the middle of the country. But I'll take a call from Belleville. Kathy wants to get into the conversation. Let's bring her in now. Kathy, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hello. And as usual, a wonderful program. I thoroughly enjoy listening to you.
Thank you.
I'd like to ask your guest if he is aware of a Nigerian alumni foundation. This was formed, I think, back in the 1960s. By Peace Corps members who had served in Nigeria. And it's called the Peace Corps Nigeria Alumni Foundation. And what they do is they give out scholarships for women and girls in Nigeria. And it's PCNAF. And it's quite a wonderful organization. I was just wondering if you're aware of it.
Yes, I am. In fact, just a week before the last, I was in Kennebunkport, Maine, and I was in a coffee shop and ran into a gentleman. He's a retired professor of surgery at Dartmouth College, and he spoke about that organization and then talked about the fact that he spent the 1960s in Nigeria, 2 years in the 1960s in Nigeria as a Peace Corps member. And so we had a very interesting conversation right there over breakfast in faraway Maine. And so, yes, this organization is alive and well.
Well, I was wondering if there's something we could do to keep this in the forefront.
I think clearly speaking about it would enable this process and this issue not to go away. And when you think about the numerous stands that are being taken in Nigeria, the protest on a daily basis, it's being covered. It's being covered by Al Jazeera and CNN. I don't believe that this issue will go away. It just needs to be in the forefront until the girls come back home.
And how many girls have been kidnapped thus far? I know there was an initial 300.
Well, the girls that have been kidnapped so far, we've seen that the number right now will probably be in excess of 300 overall. And there have been numerous kidnappings here and there. But the one that got everybody's attention was the massive kidnapping that took place about 2 months ago. But the total count will probably exceed 300 plus.
We've seen some various figures. I think in the April abduction, which was the biggest of those, was a little over 200. But
yes, 250.
Those since then have gotten higher. Why should the people of St. Louis, Missouri, aside from the basic humanitarian aspect of it, why should we in the Midwest really be concerned about what goes on in Nigeria?
You know, it's a very important question, and I have numerous responses to that. I will say this. I believe that from the humanitarian perspective, the people of St. Louis have been remarkable in addressing issues of violation of humanity, if I want to put it that way. The Bosnians coming to St. Louis is a clear demonstration of that and how they have been assimilated into this community. St. Louis cares. And when you talk about the show me state, you tend to think about it in terms of show me your compassion, show me our willingness to help others. I think from a human perspective, that's one reason. Secondly, I think when you look at it from an economic perspective, Nigeria is a large exporter of oil to the United States. It's second only to Saudi Arabia when you think about oil coming from the Middle East. And so every time you pull up to get gas, there's a very high probability that you're buying Nigerian oil. And if this situation continues and the Boko Haram issue spreads to the southeastern part of Nigeria where you have mainly all the oil production taking place, it will interrupt oil production, which in essence will have a significant impact on prices of oil. And that will begin to impact Americans' pocketbook, from that perspective. So I think trying to address this issue and to resolve it is important. And thirdly, when it comes to addressing the issue of terrorists and what I call the new generation of terrorists, which is what we have with Boko Haram, I think it's a collective effort. Nigeria does not have the capacity to handle it all by itself. They've got to reach out to superpowers like the United States. I think essentially, you know, you've got Scott's Air Force Base, which is based very close by. They're probably going to play a critical role as you move troops and you move intelligence to and from the United States to the Nigerian theater. So I think clearly this is not a Nigerian issue. This is a global issue. And more importantly, I think it extends as well and impacts St. Louis.
I wanted to be sure we mentioned the oil situation, because if people do think that it's far away, it doesn't have anything to do with us, in fact, it will.
Absolutely.
Every time you put gas in your car, you're going to be spending more money unless this thing is resolved. You just said something that caught my attention with regard to Scott Air Force Base moving troops to that theater. What are you suggesting, that the more U.S. troops are likely to wind up in that part of the world?
I mean, not troops, but I think intelligence. I think when they talked about having people on the ground, I believe, you know, nothing definitive. I don't have any intelligence as to who's moving where. But I would just say that Scott's Air Force Base is a critical part of the U.S. government dynamic in terms of the ability to move individuals and resources, whether it's the technology, from the United States to those places. And one of the things that Nigeria is lacking is that they're lacking the technology to be able to identify where these terrorists are. And whether it's Scott Air Force Base or any one of the military units in the United States, they're going to be playing the critical part, and probably they're already playing a critical part in trying to safeguard what's going on in Nigeria.
How are we regarded in Nigeria, the U.S., as a government, as a people?
Well, you know, the people of this country and America has a remarkable image in Nigeria. You know, it's an image that is earned. It is earned through technology. It is earned through many, many years of diplomatic relationship with Nigeria. When you go to Nigeria, you see U.S. presence everywhere, particularly in the oil industry. The oil service industry has been developed and harnessed by the United States. And then you're seeing major powerhouses like General Electric helping to provide energy in the country. And then the influence, the American influence, whether it's in fashion, whether it's in technology, whether it's in education, it's very pervasive. And so when America said they were coming in to try to help. It was a welcome relief by the 170 million Nigerians.
But you know, there's a lot of folks would are critical of us because wherever there's oil, it seems we are never far behind, and our interest oftentimes is more in the oil than the people of that part of the world.
Well, let me say this: I think in the case of Nigeria, it is different because the government of Nigeria asked the United States for help. Nigeria did not, I mean, America did not go in and say, you know what, we think you all need help. We're coming in to help you. In fact, the U.S. basically stayed and waited until they had a formal request. And I think this is not about oil. This is about saving lives. And yes, there are economic consequences of our actions, but clearly I think what the United States is doing in Nigeria is a true humanitarian move. And I'm very grateful, and I'm very thankful that they're there, because otherwise there'll be no alternative.
You know, we only have a couple of minutes left, but this whole notion of establishing an Islamic State in Nigeria, a part of Nigeria, whatever, it's not unique to this particular country. This is a movement that is we can see happening throughout parts of Africa and the Middle East. Is this a cause for concern?
Well, I think it is, because what has happened with this radical Islamic groups is that they see their efforts as a missionary effort, much like the missionary efforts that we saw with Christians in the turn of the 19th century and moving into the 20th century. So what they're trying to do is to generate interest and to create an interest in a following. But clearly, I think we need to counter it. We need to speak the truth with power. And speak to the fact that the issue of Islam is not just every one of them believes that they need to be terrorists. There's some great Islamic organizations and many friends that are Muslims that detest what is going on. I don't think we need to make sure that this is sort of where everybody does that. I think you see splinters and movements that are of concern and they need to be addressed. But at the same time, we also need to try to see the goodness in many of the Muslim countries like Indonesia and in many Muslims that are doing remarkable things there in St. Louis. They're medical doctors, they're professionals, they're individuals that are helping lift this society up. And so I'm very leery of generalizations when it comes to addressing these issues.
Yeah, it does seem to turn out this way, and that is that the radicals get all of the attention, and the other 200 million people don't get very much attention.
The radicals get all the press, and the good folks they get overlooked. Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, of course, they're not doing the horrific kinds of things that we have been talking about here today. Professor, it's been great talking to you, and I know that you keep in constant contact with folks over there, keeping up to date on what's going on.
We are, and our thoughts and prayers are with those that are under siege. But more importantly, I'm an optimist. I believe that the girls will return, and when they return, they will tell a story. And it'll be a story of how they were able to overcome. I pray hard that that will be the final results of this sooner than later.
Well, we certainly hope that your optimism is realized and fulfilled. Thank you very much, Benjamin Ola Akande from Webster University, Nigerian-born. Thanks for bringing us up to speed on what you know about what's taking place in your home country. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Tomorrow in St. Louis on the Air, we'll talk about a film documenting the circumstances surrounding Kirkwood Councilwoman Connie Carr's murder in the 2008 City Hall shooting. And then we'll take a look at the progress that's been made since then in improving communication and understanding between the citizens of the community, all the citizens. Archived versions of past St. Louis on the Air programs available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org. St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio 90.7 KWMU. Thank you for listening. I'm Don Marsh.